Good morning, friends. Welcome in to the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday. You've been working for the weekend. It's here, and got a good show ahead for you as we enter into these days, hopefully, of rest and recovery. Let's put it that way. Anyway, hope you've had a great week so far. Today, I'll have Dr. Allen Alday on the program in the second half of this hour. Allen, a good friend and a regular guest on the program, talking about parenting issues. He is a behavior analyst with the University of Kentucky. He's also a professor there. He's not a therapist, as he will clearly state, nor a psychologist. Deals in the realm of behavior, works with a lot of schools, very severe behavior problems, teachers, parents, and likes to point out that oftentimes behavior changes in adults can produce behavior changes in children. So we'll have him on, and I think we're going to be blessed to have his little boy Solomon along with him in the studio. So that should be a fun ride. And then the second hour, bottom of the second hour, we'll talk to Enos San Martin of Crux. Enos, who is a correspondent with the Vatican. She's an Argentinian by origin and by birth, but she'll be on to talk about some of the things happening there in Rome, including Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden, appearing there today. I think maybe speaking, who knows, right now at a conference being hosted by the Vatican regarding stem cell therapies. When we say stem cell, of course, the church is morally opposed to embryonic stem cell research, which involves the willful destruction of innocent human life beginning at conception. But rather, this conference is there to promote adult stem cell therapies, which offer great promise and oftentimes, unfortunately, get lost in all the furor over the other kind, the immoral kind of stem cell research. So all that coming up on the program today. Also, why Bishop Barron is right about C.S. Lewis' book, The Great Divorce, and we're going to have birthday bumpers today, actually duet bumpers from Willie Nelson, who's turns 83 today, and maybe the king of duets, and my question of the day will relate to that in the next segment. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to be on the program at all today. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I had a good day yesterday. Finally was able to take the leap and purchase a new washer and dryer set. Went with the top loader this time instead of the front loader. Unfortunately, have to wait till Wednesday before it's delivered and installed. So let's just say Mount Laundry is increasing in elevation in the Allen household. And then yesterday afternoon had the opportunity. You know, I teach one class at our local Catholic high school to juniors, but the teacher whose room that I use, Mr. LeBrun, asked me if I would speak to three of his freshman boys' classes and two of his junior classes yesterday and today on the topic of the theology of the body. Actually, talked to the freshmen yesterday. I'll talk to the juniors today. This rich teaching from Pope St. John Paul II. That really gives us a more expansive vision of our human sexuality, in particular, our embodiment as male and female, the fact that when God made us in his image, he made us in two different forms, as man and woman, and what that means, what it means that our body doesn't just have a biology, it has a theology. It tells us something about God and who he is and why he made us and what our purpose is. But it was, you know, of course, talking with freshman boys was the challenge yesterday because, you know, it is easy sometimes for me to forget the age gap that is there. You know, when you're, like I said, I just turned 50, so when you're the same person you were in your 20s in terms of you're the same consciousness. So if you're like me, you kind of fool yourself into somehow thinking that, you know, you're still in your 20s when you're talking to people. Then you catch a glimpse of yourself in your rearview mirror and you see you get those little, you're starting to get that little flappy neck like I'm getting at age 50. Not that I'm planning to have work done. I don't want to go all Kenny Rogers-ish on you. But you do realize the gap. And what I realized yesterday, speaking to these freshmen, You know, I was a freshman in high school, like them, in the spring of 1980. So I realized it would have been like me as a freshman in high school hearing a talk about human sexuality from someone who had been a freshman in 1944. So that kept it all in perspective. 573-4-BREAD-4. Then I got to enjoy a little softball last night. Doubleheader with my 10-year-old daughter playing first and then my 18-year-old daughter. I'm a little wistful. This is her last year of playing organized softball, at least until maybe she's an adult woman playing in a church league or something. But got to see her play last night as she plays in a local league. She with her best friend, her best friend's sister, and they played really well last night, had a big win. They've come a long way since the first year that they played softball. My daughter Naomi, when she and my daughter Mary Grace, who were only about a year apart, played softball. The first year they played softball, I'm surprised they kept it up because they played for this hard-nosed coach. She wanted the best out of them, I realize, but I don't know that she kept in mind that these girls were like 8 and 9 years old. Maybe it was 7 and 8. I can't remember. Team called the Ladybugs. I'll never forget it. When you got 7 and 8 year olds playing softball, you know the performance is going to be erratic. You're just happy if they're paying attention enough to make a play. So they had a particularly bad game, the Ladybugs did. And after the game, you know the ritual. If you're a parent with a kid on a sports team, you have the game. And then after the game, the post-game talk. Everybody's got a juice box. Everybody's got a bag of goldfish, whatever the case. And the coach brings up the highs and lows of the game. Maybe gives out a game ball and so forth. So my 7 and 8 year old daughter sitting there with their little Ladybugs teammates sipping on their Capri Suns and their coach giving them a talk. And I may have told this before, but it's worth telling again. The coach, who I said, she was no nonsense. She was tough. She's going to mold these girls into a team. This is her post-game speech, and I'm not exaggerating at all. They had this one inning, I guess, where the wheels kind of came off and they lost big. So they're sitting there and the coach says, and I quote, "Well, I'm not going to sit here and blow sunshine up your butt. You got beat. And frankly, I was embarrassed." 7 and 8 year olds, parents all standing around in disbelief. And then she had this rule on the team, right? Nobody should go swimming on game days because, of course, that would tire you out. And so she says, "Now I've just got a suspicion about something. I want to know something. How many of y'all went swimming today?" And the coach's, only one girl raised her hand. It was the coach's daughter raised her hand. And the coach said, "Melissa, you're my daughter. You should know better than that. Parents, I just want you to know she was with her father today, and I did not know this." And then she said that she'd wrapped up her inspiring speech. "You know, I was gonna take us all out for ice cream after this game. But you know what? Now I'm not in the mood." That was her post-game speech. So fortunately, my daughter has stuck with it and not given up on the game. Anyway, I digress. The reading, by the way, today the feast day of St. Catherine of Siena, really one of the towering figures in the history of the life of the church. Maybe we'll talk about her a little bit more in the next hour. The 23rd child of Jacopo and Lapa Benincasa. And back in the 14th century, in a time of grave crisis in the life of the church, sometimes known as the Great Schism, splitting the allegiance of Christendom between two and then three popes, which put even saints on opposing sides, Catherine of Siena. It's not for nothing that she's a co-patron of Italy, and she's one of the doctors of the church. And she and Teresa of Avila named the first two women as doctors of the church. Of course, St. Therese of Lisieux would join them. So we wrap up in our readings today, in our mass readings from Acts chapter 15, this whole event of the First Jerusalem Council dealing with the Gentile problem. What to do with the Gentiles? Should we require of them the Mosaic Law? And so as this passage wraps up the First Jerusalem Council, in other words, Jesus again entrusting the authority of his church not primarily to a book at this point, but to persons, apostles, and their authoritative leadership guided by the Holy Spirit. As it says here, the apostles and presbyters really meaning priests, the apostles and presbyters, in agreement with the whole church, decided to choose representatives and to send them to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas. They sent them, and they basically gave them, it is the decision of the Holy Spirit and of us not to place on you any burden beyond these necessities, namely to abstain from meat sacrificed to idols, from blood, from meats of strangled animals, and from unlawful marriage. If you keep free of these, you will be doing what is right. Farewell. I like the way they say that there. It is the decision of the Holy Spirit and us. You know, just as Jesus is fully God and fully man, the church is fully divine and fully human. God does not bypass any human aspect of the church. The Holy Spirit works in and through, sometimes in spite of, our own human frailties. But it was the decision of the Holy Spirit and of us. Tells us some profound things about the church and why the church exists. We'll be back with more on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Counted the stars on the 4th of July, wishing we were rockets bursting into the sky, talking about redemption and leaving things behind. As the sun sank west of the Mendocino County line.
Scarce as Monday morning, feeling washed away. I orchestrated paradise, couldn't make you stay. You danced with the horses through the sands of time. As the sun sinks west of the Mendocino County line.
These pictures and I keep these photographs to remind me of a time.
These pictures and these photographs let me know I'm doing fine.
I used to make you happy once upon a time, but the sun sank west of the Mendocino County line.
16 minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. There's one of Willie's best duets, in my opinion. Willie Nelson, 83 years old today, Mendocino County line. He and Leanne Womack, who I could listen to sing the phone book, quite frankly. And that's my question of the day here on the Redheaded Stranger's 83rd birthday. We talked recently about who's going to fill their shoes with the passing of Merle Haggard, some of these country legends, and Willie, one of the last remaining legends. We're going to listen to some of his duets over the course of the program today as our bumper music, just because I want to, and it's Willie, so I don't really need an excuse. So that's up there in my favorites, Willie Nelson duets. If you want to chime in, you can give us a call, 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me at MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. You can also post your response on Facebook or on Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle. Willie Scott had, I mean, he may have sung more duets with a wider diversity of artists than anyone that I can remember. Everybody from Snoop Dogg to Merle Haggard to Julio Iglesias. That's a classic, you know, where Julio comes in, "To all the girls I've loved before." And then Willie comes in, "All the girls I've loved before." It's quite an interesting combination. But it works, because it's Willie. That's all that matters. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. NFL draft last night. Let's see, no surprise. Goff picked number one. Oh, let's see. I don't even know his first name. That shows you where I am. I know Carson Wentz going number two. Two quarterbacks. Right out of the gate, the Rams taking Goff and the Eagles taking Wentz. I know my son watched the draft. I need to ask him about it. Ezekiel Elliott, number four there, running back out of Ohio State. Really, did Ohio State have, wow, Ohio State had the third and fourth picks from their school. Listen, you watch college football, you see the teams that excel, you see the teams that struggle. Like my Kentucky Wildcats would be in that latter group, for example. All you have to do is look at the draft list. It's not rocket science. I mean, I know, yes, coaching makes a difference. But the truth is, the teams that succeed are the teams with the talent. And all you have to do is look at the NFL draft list to see what are the programs that have the talent. And you'll see it dominated typically by SEC teams. You'll see a couple of Big Ten. Ohio State, my gosh, Ohio State has at least, let's see, looking at the draft list here. I mean, what are you going to say about this? Ohio State has five of the first 20 guys picked in the NFL draft. Five first rounders out of one college. That's pretty staggering, to say the least. 5734 Brett Ford. Now, an interesting article that I saw yesterday out of, actually, it was a couple of days ago, but then I saw some commentary on it yesterday. It was an editorial in USA Today, and it was an article about so-called LGBT rights and what the NCAA is going to do with schools that have a different set of moral values. The name of the article was When Religion and LGBT Rights Collide. Let me see if I can pull up the USA Today piece here, because it sort of is a shot across the bow of how these issues are continue to present themselves. Because, you know, the NCAA is a collection of a whole bunch of different types of universities. You've got large public land-grant universities, of course, and you've got private, non-sectarian, though, schools. And then you've got religious schools. You've got, among them, Catholic schools. And this editorial in USA Today said, freedom of religion and freedom from discrimination clash in North Carolina and Mississippi. The same tensions are simmering among LGBT athletes, the NCAA, and its religious schools. And the subtitle says here, a balancing act. NCAA tries to respect all members, yet be inclusive. As it says, Connor Griffin wondered if he'd feel like a fish out of water as a gay athlete at a Catholic college. Instead, the freshman swimmer quickly found a home in the chlorinated waters of Fordham University's pool and the Catholic attitude of its student body. Catholic, in its lowercase iteration, means broad-minded. And Griffin says he found immediate acceptance when he came out to his new teammates on arrival last summer. Then when he came out publicly months later, he garnered online support from many others he had never met. Here we have the classic dividing out of capital C Catholic from lower C Catholic in this USA Today publication. The word Catholic means universal, not necessarily broad-minded, just to let you know, USA Today. But I guess it all depends on how one defines broad-minded. That's why I'm particularly fond of that scripture toward the end of Luke's gospel. After Jesus has risen and just before he ascends, it says Jesus opened their mind to understand the scriptures. This accusation that to believe, for example, in God, to believe in the Christian faith, and where we would argue the fullness of the Christian faith in being a Catholic is somehow about being closed-minded. The truth is, it is the Christian believer who sees mystery and who sees transcendence in that which is simply the otherwise seen as the common and the material. Isn't it the Christian who sees through mystical eyes, who is truly the open-minded one, rather than the strict materialist who sees nothing more than human beings and all the universe as combinations of chemicals and different properties? Catholic means broad-minded. The Catholic means universal, USA Today. The whole truth for the whole world. Anyway, so this goes on to say that Griffin tells USA Today Sports, people want to tell me I'm brave. Coming out as brave coming out as gay isn't brave or shouldn't be. I was born this way. I didn't choose it. People choose to enlist in the army. That's brave. Coming out should just be normal and not a big deal. Except that it is a big deal, USA Today says, at many religiously affiliated colleges that see homosexuality as a sin and that have codes of conduct banning same-sex relations. Now, let's back up again a minute and let's deconstruct this straw man from USA Today. Does the Catholic Church see homosexuality as a sin? In other words, homosexual desire? And the answer is no. The church sees, of course, every human person bearing the image and the likeness of God and possessing an inalienable and profound dignity in their very person, no matter their sexual desires. And desires themselves simply are. They are not an immoral activity. Desires simply are. Now, the Catholic claim would be that sexual desire that is oriented toward fulfillment in a same-sex erotic relationship is, by its very nature, ordered not to the end for which our sexual desires exist, which is to be expressed in the consummating act of marital union. And so the desire itself, sometimes the term has been used disordered. Some are offended by that. It simply means it tends to a disordered expression of human sexuality. So we'll keep an eye on this. But again, it's inevitable if one sees homosexual behavior as the same thing as race and gender, then these types of conflicts are simply inevitable. Anyway, let's pick up and get our What Were You Thinkings in here. We got a couple of nominees. This out of Wilmington, North Carolina, birthplace of Michael Jordan. Wilmington couple charged after pulling gun over boneless wing mix-up. A Wilmington couple facing charges after a woman showed a gun at a local restaurant over a wrong order of chicken wings. Boneless or bone-in, I guess. Now, Clarissa and Rasheem, this couple, I mean, listen, I know the frustration. I ordered a chicken sandwich, plain McChicken, for my daughter last night, 10-year-old. And, of course, it wasn't plain. I didn't think about pulling out a pistol. Okay, anger management, anyone? How about number two? We're going to say goes to the whole country of Australia and continent. This story, redback spider bites Australian man on penis. He was in the porta potty, and that was where the spider bite occurred. Given the fact the presence of venomous snakes and spiders, I think Australia has something like, I don't know, 7 of the 10 most poisonous spiders in the world. Why does anyone pull down their pants in that country is all I'm asking. But the winner we're going to give to, unfortunately, to Will Ferrell, who I love as a comedian, but it's been reported that he's going to be starring in a film that's going to make fun of Ronald Reagan's Alzheimer's disease. Really, Will? Not funny, brother. Not funny at all. You lost some points in my book. We'll be back with Dr. Allen Alday. This is The Mike Allen Show. At the bottom of the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show, listening to one of Willie's greatest duets, in my opinion, here on the Redheaded Stranger's 83rd birthday, his duet with the late Ray Charles, Seven Spanish Angels. I'm here in the studio with two guests today. My friend, Dr. Alan Alday, who is a professor at the University of Kentucky, a certified behavior analyst who comes on every couple weeks. We talk about issues related to behavior and how sometimes adult behavior impacts a child's behavior. He works with a lot of schools and, like I said, teaches there at the university. He's here in the studio, Dr. Alan Alday, along with, well, I'll let him introduce the other guest who's here today. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Mike. So this morning we have somebody who was very motivated to get up this morning.
We've talked about motivation on the program, right?
We have. Most mornings I say, come on, Solomon, it's time to get up. I don't want to get up. We got to get to school. I don't want to get up. And we got to come on. And this morning he's been asking to come on here and so he can come and see what kind of equipment you use. So
he's in the palatial studios today.
He is. And he said, I said, come on, buddy, we got to get up to go. And he was, he popped right up. He said, all right, let's go. And he got dressed. We didn't have any. It's amazing what a little motivation will do for you.
That's impressive. There's sometimes I don't want to get dressed and come in here, Solomon. So that's really wonderful. And Solomon is how old?
Solomon is 6. He'll be 7 at the end of May. So he's thrilled to death to be able to come and do this.
What day at the end of May?
What day?
29th.
May 29th.
All right. Because I've got a daughter whose birthday is the 31st. So. Ooh. But she's going to be 18.
Oh, man. We'll be there probably soon. That's what scares me. We'll go to sleep and wake up, and he'll be 18. So,
well, it's great to have Solomon. And like I said, big birthday today, Willie Nelson. Are you a Willie fan?
I've always liked Willie Nelson. He's got the most, he has the most unique voice. And it's just amazing to me that voice has been so popular. And like you said, with all the duets that he's done, and even listen to Ray Charles and then him, it's just like, wow, that's could be much more different.
But he also has a duet with Snoop Dogg.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
actually.
Well, they probably have a common love of a common medicinal plant would be my guess, but
I would imagine that's probably pretty accurate. So, but it's hard to believe he's 83.
83 years old. He's one of the we had Merle Haggard's recent death, which I think we talked about when you were on the program. He is left Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers. You start going, there's not a long list left of some of the real legends.
Well, the good thing about him is at least he has not had a lot of facial reconstruction.
Yeah,
he still
true.
Looks kind of like he Willie, looks like he should be 83.
Willie looks like Willie, no doubt. If you've got a question for Alan Alday, 573-4-BREAD-4, maybe you've been hearing him on the program and you've thought about some issues, maybe behaviorally related, and you want to ask him a question, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can get on the program or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can text, or you can get on Facebook or on Twitter. By the way, I did want to mention something. David's sending me an email the Bishop of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, who is the former Bishop of Lexington, Kentucky, Bishop Ronald Gaynor, somebody who I have a great personal affection and gratitude for, as many do here who were under his leadership, to pray for Bishop Gaynor. He has been hospitalized recently. Not a lot of details from the Diocese of Harrisburg. He was not feeling well. I think he either got out of the hospital yesterday or today after being in about a week. So keep Bishop Ronald Gaynor in your prayers, if you would. We want to talk today, I guess, about breaking behavior chains.
Yeah, it's just, one of the many things that I think that we struggle with. And I think, as I reflect on coming on here and the things that we do, I think sometimes about they're kind of very broad topics that I tend to discuss because, people that listen have little kids, they have grown kids, they have, fully adult kids and even grandkids, maybe even adult grandkids. And so trying to cover things that everybody can chew on is kind of hard. But I think this is one of the things I've thought about because, I've dealt with this. We all deal with it. And as we move forward in our, as our kids get older, we develop these things we call chains. I mean, like they're behavior chains, and so they literally are like linked together. And I'll explain how that it works in a second. But if you can think about it, it really is pretty amazing how these always affect us. Even, you know, I still speak to my mom at times about, you know, when she's talking to my sister, she says, well, I said, well, you know, if she says this, then you don't say this, because that's part of the chain. I mean, and, you know, and so anyway, I was just kind of thinking about that and how, you know, how these chains kind of affect us and how we can help to kind of break the chains. So if you can bear with me, I'll kind of give you a very basic example of just a non-emotional behavior chain that we go through. And then I think from that, we'll be able to translate, hopefully that will translate into kind of the bigger behavior chain of our interpersonal relationship. So if you can imagine, think of like when you drive your car, you know, there are several steps you have to do, and the previous step has to be successful for you to be able to do the next step. So like, for instance, you know, you have to be able to unlock the door before you can get open the door. So, I mean, you know, you have to be successful at unlocking the door in order to open the door. And so, you know, then from opening the door, then you have to sit down. Then you have to close the door. Then you have to put the key in the ignition, then put on your seatbelt. You know, put your foot on the brake, turn the key, put the car in gear and drive. So, I mean, you know, the ultimate goal of getting in your car is to drive somewhere. So that's, but so that it, knowing that that is kind of the ultimate reinforcer is driving. Look at all the steps that have to go. Mm. So, I mean, just something as simple as that we never think about. I mean, I know I never think about, I don't know if other people do this, that if they see me on the road, they'll be like, oh gosh, I need to get out of the way. But, you know, sometimes you just get in the car and you just kind of like, well, gosh, we're in Alabama. How in the world did we get here? You know, I mean, it's because you don't really think about it. It just becomes just a very much of a rote process, just like
a series of steps that are intertwined, but that maybe you don't always are not always conscious of.
Right. I mean, just like if I say, you know, 2 + 2, most people think, okay, it's 4. Well, you don't remember the process of learning that 2 + 2 = 4, and it's just a rote, it's just something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Just like driving a car. I mean, when you're 16 or 15, you know, when you first get in a car, you're, you know, you really think about each of the steps that you're doing and how hard you push the gas pedal. And, you know, as you drive through yellow lights, do I speed up or do I slow down, or how do I make that? I mean, all these things we never think about because they've become very rote parts of our behavior chain of driving a car. But if you think about it, if one of those parts is missing, you can't get to your ultimate goal, which is
right,
to drive the car. I mean, if you open the door, sit down, but you don't have your key, then you're not going anywhere, you know. Or if you're, you know,
we've all been there.
And we have. And at times, you know, even if some places I've parked here in Lexington that, you know, when you parallel park, you get in your car and you're not going anywhere because people have pulled too close to you.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you would never be able to get away. So you know, again, taking a non-emotional task like driving and thinking about how each of those things have steps is really something, because they do become not we don't even think about it. And that also happens whenever we're dealing with people. I mean, we kind of develop these behavior chains with our children, and I would say especially for people who have adult children, you know, it's pretty well ingrained that, you know, every time mom calls, I say hello, she says hi, we talk, you know, what are you doing? I'm doing this. And then she always has to ask, well, what about blank? And you're like, oh, why do you have to bring that up, mom? Well, you know, I just worry about it, but you know, not, you know, and then it just, and you think about it. I mean, people have these very, very predictable behaviors that they go through interactions with family. I mean, and it's, you know, it always starts with mom talking about blank, or with dad always has to bring up the fact that my husband doesn't do blank, or, you know, I mean, like it always starts with that. And I think that is
and it becomes very predictable in terms
does.
Of where it's going. Oh yeah.
And we get comfortable with it. You know, I mean, like, and it's it's just like, well, you know, every time I talk to whoever, this is what happens. You know, I can't even, you know, call my sister anymore, because every time I call her, she brings up this and we get into a fight and she says this, then I say that. And then the chain continues with, then I call them back and say, I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry too. I love you too. You know, and it's a very predictable chain that's really sometimes not all that healthy for us to engage in. You know, and some people may call it like pushing buttons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they put, you know, he knows exactly where to push my button, and he pushes that button and he pushes it hard. But if you think about, you know, proverbial button pushing, the kid knows it's part of a chain.
Sure.
You know, and it's pretty funny to see how this stuff works out. So,
well, we'll be back in a minute with Dr. Alan Alday and our special guest, Solomon Alday. We'll be back in just a minute on the Mike Allen Show. If you've got a question or a comment, 573-4-BREAD-4. See you in a minute.
Raise my head and set myself in the eye of a storm, in the belly of a whale. My spirit stood on solid ground. I'll be at peace when they lay me down.
When I was a child, I cried until my knees were satisfied. My needs have grown up pound for pound. I'll be at peace when they lay me down.
When they lay me down someday, my soul will rise.
Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show, 14 minutes before the hour. All Willie on the bumper music today. Duets. That's my question today. Your favorite Willie Nelson duet. That's his most recent duet, which I happen to think is absolutely fantastic, his duet with Loretta Lynn. Both of them now in their 80s, and you got to see the video. It's so precious, the two of them singing together. I'll be at peace when they lay me down. Blessed to have in the studio Dr. Alan Alday, who teaches at the University of Kentucky. He's a regular guest. He's a behavior analyst. He's also joined today in the studio by his son, Solomon. Age six. Yay, Solomon. You want to say hi to everybody in radio world?
Hi.
Solomon's here to keep Alan honest. You know, it's kind of like when I go out and speak about marriage in my full-time work, I can sound like a real genius about marriage when Angie's not there. But when she's there, she can kind of, you know, hold me accountable. So that's why Solomon's here.
He keeps me accountable pretty much all the time. So, you know, I stay humbled every time I'm in public and I think, oh, yeah, it's good. He's a pretty good boy, though.
So he is a good boy, no doubt about it. And anyway, so 573-4-BREAD-4, you may have a question or a comment for Alan related to behavior issues. So we're talking about behavior chains and these common patterns we get into. Sometimes we even subconsciously find comfort in them because there's a predictability there, but they're not always helpful. Sometimes they're destructive in how we can break those chains.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and I think that's the, you know, the goal of all this is trying to figure out, you know, just how do we stop it? And how do we, you know, we kind of have to, you know, put our foot into the revolving door of the and stop it. And that's kind of a hard thing to do, because you have to, one, be aware. And I think that's kind of the hope of today, is just to make people aware of, you know, if there's a common thing you complain about with your kids, of, you know, they say this, you know, they always bring up this. And so if it's something that they bring up consistently, then, you know, we got to figure out a way to either change our reaction to it. We have to change. We have to break the chain, because otherwise it's just going to continue. And, you know, and I, like I said, you know, I know with, like, for example, like with my mom and my sister, I mean, they at times have a contentious relationship, and, you know, and they know how to push each other's buttons, and it's so predictable. I mean, I can almost predict that, you know, the things my mom would complain about or the things my sister would complain about. I mean, and, you know, each of them complaining separately to me, but it's so predictable what they complain about because it's just follows this behavior chain. And so, you know, through a lot of coaching, and it's very difficult, you know, because, you know, it's emotion involved. But, you know, through this, you know, if there's a kind of a button that people push, so they, you know, you kind of escalate to this place, they push your button, and then it kind of goes, it goes poor real quick. You know, the thing is giving a different response. And a lot of times it has to be us. And this is why, you know, a lot of the focus of my research and my teaching and all is really changing our behavior. Because, you know, it's much easier for me to manage Solomon's behavior than it is for me to manage my behavior. Because I'm always right and he's always wrong.
And that's part of the problem, isn't it? I mean, with these chains, we tend to think, well, you know what? We can't break this chain of behavior because of her or because of him, because it's their fault.
Yeah, she's not going to change, so why should I change? I mean, you know, I mean, it gets into a whole lot of that kind of stuff. And, oh, it's them, it's not me. I mean,
heck. I'm standing on principle, you know?
I stand on a whole lot of that, you know, and it hadn't worked so well in many ways, but... But I think that is the story of kind of how to do this is, you know, going through and figuring out, okay, so whenever they say this one thing that always, you know, they say, well, you never love me anyway. Oh, well, there we go. You know, and that, I mean, I'm using this as a personal example. You know, you never loved me anyway. Well, okay. Well, yes, I have. No, you haven't. Yes, I. You know, it's kind of duck season, wabbit season. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yes.
Duck season, wabbit season, duck season.
A classic.
You know, I mean, it's anyway. If you've never seen that, then. But he's never seen Bugs Bunny, so we'll have to do that, I guess. But anyway, but as you know, as you think about that, well, you say you never loved me anyway, and that begins that predictable behavior chain of. Yes, I have. No, you haven't. Yes, I have. No, you haven't. You know, and all these things. So it's changing the way you respond to that and say, well, you never loved me anyway. And you saying, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. Because that, and you can see whenever you give a reaction to a kid in a different, or to an adult or to anybody, you can see whenever you give a different reaction to that, they don't really know what to do with it.
Mm.
You know, just like when you sit down in your car and you don't have your car keys, you're like, oh, man, I can't drive anywhere. It's the same principle because you get this look on your face of, wait a minute, I forgot my keys. So you will see, because I'll never forget, I was working with a kid. This was early in my career, and the kid used very, very profane language towards teachers, and it always worked because he'd say something, and they would get mad, and then he would do this, and then we would just go back and forth. And this kid, you know, he used the F word and called me an idiot with those, which is, you know, and use those together. And there was one other word he used too, a geek. That's what, that was the other. Yes, a geek. So I just remember thinking, I was like, okay, I know what he's looking for. So I laughed. I thought, wow, that was a pretty creative That was a pretty creative thing to call me. I said, nobody's actually ever called me that before. So, you know, that was pretty good. And this kid looked at me like I'd just grown a third arm or something. And he never cursed at me ever again because it didn't work. And all it took for that kid was just one time. Now, how this is going to affect, you know, you all and me and with our children is we have a long history of this chain, so you can't expect it to break after one time.
After the longer the history, the tougher it is, the stronger it is.
It is, and so it's not just one time is not going to always do it. So, but the consistency of, you know, you never loved me anyway, and well, I'm sorry you feel that way. You know, or I've even, you know, talked to my mom about things like saying, well, gosh, I got to go. I'm sorry. Somebody's at the door. I mean, just finding some way to break the chain because otherwise it just gets into this cycle of just very, very unhealthy behavior between an adult, two adults even. And so finding a way to break that chain, even if it's, you know, I'm, you know, gosh, I can't believe it's, you know, it's a beautiful day today here, or finding some answer to give that's not your typical self-defense. Because what it really boils down to, especially in these personal interactions, is it comes down to pride. How dare you say I don't love you? How dare you say that? I've done everything for you. I bore you in my belly, and you know, you get into stuff like this, but it's not, that's not the point of it. The point of it is not, you know, they're not saying that because obviously they know you, they bore you in their belly. They're saying it because they're mad, and you're the one person that's causing the friction, and so they just trying to, you know, get a rise out of you. And it's very interesting how behavior change work.
You know, hearing you talk about this, I mean, I recognize this, and it can recognize this in my own family life too. We're here with Dr. Alan Alday, professor at the University of Kentucky, certified behavior analyst, in studio with he and his son Solomon. But you know, one of the things that you can see is, well, what's that old definition of insanity that you hear in recovery? It's doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result.
Yeah.
These chains can go on for decades, and somehow, you know, and we're so prideful because we're standing on principle, and I know I'm right, and so we dig in,
right?
And both sides dig in, and at a certain point, it really doesn't matter who's right and who's wrong. It really doesn't.
Right.
Somebody's got to break the chain.
Well, and you know, it's right. Somebody has to be the bigger person, and they have to just swallow their pride and do it. And that is really difficult. I mean, that's probably one of the hardest things to do, because, you know, I'm thinking there's probably somebody thinking, oh, wow, this sounds like me and my daughter. And, you know, she's 50 and I'm 70, and I can't believe, you know, we've been doing this for 50 years. And that's, I mean, that's the way it goes. And so it is pride. I mean, it is, and it's a hard thing to do. Don't get me wrong. Even with kids I work with in the schools, I don't like being cursed at or hit or, you know, any of these things. But they're all kind of predictable chains that the kid knows that this typically works. When a teacher does this, then I do this, then, you know, and it becomes a very predictable outcome. And so it's just, you know, being the bigger person and stepping in and breaking it. And it, believe me, it's hard. I mean, I get it. I struggle with it myself.
But we're not going to, more than likely, God's not going to be able to do a new thing in us until we're willing to lay down our pride.
Right. And that's one of the biggest, you know, which I know I've mentioned on here before, the litany of humility. Man, that's the hardest, the hardest prayer I've ever prayed. And you know, but it is stepping back and saying, okay, you know, am I willing to say whenever my kid pushes my button, you know, gosh, sorry you feel that way.
Well, Alan, unfortunately, we're about out of time.
Yeah.
It's been great to have you here. It's been especially nice, Solomon, to have you here. Now, you and your dad are going to get some breakfast. What are you going to eat?
Cookies
for breakfast. Hopefully mom's not listening, okay?
I hope not.
Thanks, Alan. Blessings to you and Carrie and your family. We'll be back with a new hour of the Mike Allen Show.